Texas Farmers Insurance Company versus Sheftic Adamant. You can correct me on the pronunciation.
May it please the court, Mr. Rogers will present arguments for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, with me today is Bill Cobb from my firm as well. This case involves the construction of Texas Insurance Code Article 2135B, as well as the construction of Texas Insurance Code Article 5.101, which is the flexible rating program that Texas used to have for making rates for automobile insurance. The court below, quoting the Third Court's opinion in Liberty Mutual Insurance Company versus Greasy, expressed the fear that appellants or petitioners or our construction of Article 2135B, that it permits insurers to collect premiums and permits some insurers to collect payments in addition to premiums that are enumerated, policy fees, taxes, finance charges. The Third Court in Greasing expressed the fear that that interpretation would yield what it called unregulated add-ons to the price of regulated insurance premium. At the same time, the respondent claims that the insurer's construction of Article 2135B is going to result in the deregulation of automobile insurance in Texas. Neither is true with respect to the Auto Theft Prevention Authority fee, which is the dispute before this court. The regulator, the Commissioner of Insurance, doing his job as the regulator, went through a rulemaking process with regard to the ATPA fee. He promulgated two rules dealing with that fee. One found at 28 Texas Administrative Code, Section 5.205, and another which is found in the Texas Automobile Rules and Rating Manual at Rule 15. The regulator, armed with the knowledge that this tax was imposed upon insurers, armed with the knowledge that he regulated premiums for motor vehicle insurance, decided that this fee or tax under the Auto Theft Prevention Act would be levied by the insurer or recouped by the insurer directly from the insured in addition to premium, i.e., he determined it's not premium. He directed the insurers to recoup it directly from the insured and required that the insurer give a notice, a written notice, to the insured that the $1 fee was being billed in addition to premium. It works out to a 50-cent fee because auto policies in Texas are written for 6-month periods. So this hardly, in my opinion, qualifies as either an unregulated add-on or the deregulation of automobile insurance.
Well, but it could lead to that based on your construction. I mean, yeah, I realize you're saying that's not what happened in this case, but if all these fees under 2135B, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 don't come within the rate in 5.101, then it could lead to that result.
The fee, you're absolutely right, the fees that don't come into the rate under 5.101, if an insurer is not rate regulated, for example, take mutual life insurance companies. They're not rate regulated. They have membership fees. They can charge a membership fee. The two petitioners are domestic stock companies. They don't have membership fees because they're not that type of organization. So they wouldn't charge membership fees in the first place.
But the point being, they could charge these things without any regulation. And theoretically, there could be double charges.
Theoretically, there could be double charging. Theoretically. But you don't need 2135B to do that, nor does 2135B authorize double charging. A rate-regulated insurer, for example, the two petitioners who are rate-regulated in the sale of private passenger automobile insurance, with respect to the policy fees, for example, in 2135B, include the policy fees in the rate-making process. So a rate-regulated insurer like the two petitioners could certainly charge policy fees in addition to the regulated rate, but they'd be violating rate regulation by doing so. If we go back prior to the adoption of Article 2135B in 1991, automobile insurers in Texas have been regulated, recollection serves me correctly, since 1927 by the commissioner, then by the State Board of Insurance, then by the Board of Insurance Commissioners, then by the State Board of Insurance, and now by the commissioner of the Texas Department of Insurance again. Insurers that are rate regulated could double dip with or without 2135B in 1991 simply by including costs in their rate base that were normally included in their rate base and then circumventing rate regulation and attempting to levy those costs again. But that circumvents the whole concept of rate regulation, violates the rate regulatory process, and violates the rate regulatory laws.
Well, but here's something that I don't understand about that. Your client, I presume, has put taxes in its rate before under 5101, right?
Yes, premium taxes.
And is that, are you saying it's just within the company's discretion where to put them? Because if they have put them there before, who makes that decision as whether they go there or whether they go outside the 5101 rate?
Ultimately, the commissioner makes that decision as the regulator. As a practical matter, when making rates, you start with, as we say in the brief, the pure premium, and that's the first component in rate making. And the pure premium consists of the losses paid on claims and the expenses associated with adjusting those losses. That's pure premium. That's all that goes into it. But that pure premium wouldn't compensate an insurer for all the expenses he incurs in the running of the business of insurance, let alone give it a profit on a regulated rate. So added to the pure premium is a factor called expense loading. And you load the expenses into the pure premium and you get the gross rate. The expense loading is where you get things like policy fees, premium taxes, agents commissions. And these are loaded as a percentage into the gross rate. Theoretically, the ATPA fee could be loaded in the rates. The commissioner didn't do it. And I would suggest that the commissioner didn't do it because it doesn't fit into the rate making. Premium taxes are taxed as a percentage of premium. So the rate that an insured is charged, if you are a better driver than I am, you pay less premium and the insurer pays less premium taxes. If I pay a higher rate or a higher premium, the insurer pays more premium taxes. So the premium taxes fluctuate in proportion to the premium built into the rate based on the risk classifications. Our $1 ATPA fee doesn't do that. It's not like agent commissions. It doesn't increase with the premium. It's not like premium taxes that increase with the premium. It's just this $1 per vehicle fee sitting out there all by itself.
But so, there's nothing to prevent it from coming under 5101.
Well, the question then, Judge, where do you put it? When we make rates.
But I thought you acknowledged that it would be proper to assess it under 5101.
No, I said it's theoretically possible, and here's the problem with it. When making automobile rates, they're made by line. You'll recall that 5.101 defines rate as the price per line per unit of exposure. The per line refers to the lines of automobile insurance coverage in the private passenger automobile policy, and those lines are, first, liability. There are two separate lines in liability: liability bodily injury, liability property damage. Then after liability, you have PIP, MedPay, UM, which has two lines, property damage, bodily injury, and then comprehensive and collision. The premium taxes, when you talk about taxes, plug nicely into each line because we're talking about the premium taxes that go into the profit factor in the expense loading for property damage, bodily injury, PIP, MedPay. So there's a place to put them. There is no place to put the ATPA fee. If you spread it over all the coverages, then the insurer is not collecting that fee dollar for dollar from the insurer, because part of it's in liability, part of it's in PIP, part of it's in MedPay. And if the insured doesn't buy all those coverages, then the insurer isn't recouping the fee. So when we talk about the benchmark rate process, the commissioner made the benchmark rates, and he's instructed by the legislature to do so, coming up with a range of rates, which is 30% below and 30% above the benchmark rate. So if he plugs in the benchmark rate for each line and puts 10 cents in this line, 10 cents in this line, and I buy less than the lines, all the lines, then the insurer is not recouping it. And then when the insurer makes its flex filings, which it makes individually, it can't put the ATPA fee in the flex filings, because if its flex filing is the maximum 30% above the benchmark rate, and it's collecting $1.30. It's making a profit off that. If its flex filings are under the benchmark rate, then it's not collecting the entire fee. And if we accept the proposition that was articulated in American Alliance by the Third Court back in 1931, that an insurer cannot be prohibited from collecting attack under the Due Process Clause and the Equal Protection Clause, then the insurer is entitled to collect that fee at 50%, 50 cents per six-month policy period as 50 cents and not 48 cents or 30 cents by having it spread through the rates. So likely the thought processes of the commissioner were, well, this fee really doesn't fit in the rates. It can't be spread and collected in the benchmark rate. It can't be spread in the individual flex filings. And even if it were, if you were filing higher than the benchmark, you're collecting more than the fee. And if you were collecting lower than the benchmark, you're collecting less than you're entitled to. So the commissioner regulating the business of insurance instructed insurers to collect this fee in addition to premium directly from the insurers. Now, if you go back and look at the American Alliance case,
What statute gives the commissioner that authority?
His authority to regulate rates. It starts with Article 5.01, and that is his legislative grant of authority. And it grants him the exclusive authority to promulgate, prescribe, just reasonable rates of premium and so on, but it also uses the word determine. Determine. Then you go to Article 5.101 for promulgating the benchmark rate, and it talks about the various items that go into making up the rate. So when the commissioner is promulgating the rate and determining the rate, he has the discretion, other than those expenses that are expressly disallowed, to decide within the rate-making scheme and actuarial principles, how and when something is going to figure into the rates or not. That is a discretion vested in the commissioner under his power to determine, promulgate, and prescribe rates. The court in American Alliance observed, and this is going back to a 2% tax that was levied by the legislature to fund the firemen's retirement and relief fund. The legislature provided in that law that the tax could neither be collected from the insured, nor could it be included in the rates for the insured. And the court, one, struck it down as unconstitutional, but made the observation that's pertinent here that it didn't matter whether it was included in the expense, the court there called it expense account, but they mean expense loading. It didn't matter whether it went to expense loading or it was added on to the rate at the end.
Well, but that really wasn't the whole, I mean, they didn't address the question before us today. I mean, the court there just said it's confiscatory, whatever column you put it in.
That's correct. But the point being, the commissioner has the authority to determine that we're going to make the benchmark rates, we're going to have the flex filings made, and we've got this 50 cents per policy period hanging out here under the ATPA fee, and I'm going to instruct insurers to collect it directly.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Time's expired, and the court is ready to hear argument from the respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Powers will present argument for the respondents.
May it please the court, my name is DJ Powers, and I represent the respondent, Adamage.
Mr. Powers, let me see if I can understand the procedural posture of this case. It was filed as a class suit, correct?
Yes.
Dispositive motions for summary judgment were filed before the class certification determination?
Yes. And
has there been a class determination on whether it can be certified or not?
No, there has not been. What happened was the...
And Mr. Adamage's claims were severed and the summary judgment was granted so that it's a final summary judgment as to Mr. Adamage.
On his individual claim.
So we're up here on a final appealable order.
Yes.
Correct? It's not an interlocutory appeal.
That's true, Your Honor.
Okay.
The key issue in this case is whether the Article 5.101 rate is only the premium charge, as Farmers contends, or whether it is the sum of all charges, including the premium, policy fee, tax charges, all those charges listed in 2135B, as a court of appeals rule.
Let me make sure. Are you claiming that the company has collected this fee under its rate making, or do you acknowledge they have not?
The evidence is not clear one way or the other. Our position is that it's irrelevant. This is what came up.
I know that's your position, but okay. I just wondered if you're claiming they're double dipping here. I understand you say there's the potential to double dip, but do you acknowledge or is there anything on the record as to whether there was double dipping here?
The only thing on the record is that they did not include it in their premium. Okay. But, of course, our position is the 5.101 rate is not just the premium charge. It's all the charges.
But if it's broken down as a percentage by line, then couldn't you pretty easily tell whether it's included in there?
Oh, I've been doing rate regulation for about 18 years, and I can tell you it is very difficult to figure out what's in. You just get a number on your deck page. It's $150 for bodily injury, and there's no way to tell what's in there. You have to go back through the rate filings. And what the rate filings are based on are reports that they file with the Department of Insurance about how many taxes, licenses, and fees they pay. If you look at Exhibit, I believe it's Appendix 7 to our brief, that's where they report their numbers to back up the rates. And there's a line in there. It says taxes, licenses, and fees incurred. That's where they report the taxes, license, and fees incurred, and then that's put into the rate. There's no exception in there for the ATP fee. Or the OPIC, as the Office of Public Insurance Counsel.
But how do you address their argument? I mean, you're the commissioner. Where do you put it? How do you divide it between these different lines?
The same way we do all other sorts of expenses that are exactly like this. They put it into the rate. That's what actuaries do. Let me give you just a couple of examples. The simplest one is the debt page itself. It costs money to produce the declarations page. And it costs the same whether I have one coverage or I have five coverages on that deck page. It's still a piece of paper that I got to run through the printer. And that's one cost. Actuaries then spread that cost to make sure they recoup their cost in the rates. That's what insurance is all about, spreading those costs amongst insurers.
And they bill that cost as what and where?
It's in the rates. They bill it. They don't bill it. It's the
assigned to a particular rate. Line, or just on top of the line costs to include in the total premium charge.
Actuaries have discretion in how they do that. They could do it one way. They could say this is a flat fee. Everybody has to get bodily injury coverage, that first coverage. So it may be that they put it in that charge. It may be that they spread it out amongst the different coverages, because across all their insureds, they will recoup all those expenses. Actuaries have the discretion in how they set the rates like that.
But it seems to me this is different, though, than a declaration page cost. If the statute says that you have $1 per car year, and you don't know what the consumer is, which lines are consumers going to buy, are you saying then that at the time the policy is issued, that's when they spread it? Or how could they include it within the rate?
No, this is basic rate making. In rate making,
if somebody buys all the lines and you spread it between all of them, then you recover your dollar. If you spread it between all the lines and they only buy half of the lines, then you haven't recovered your dollar, but you still have the charge.
With all due respect, that's not true, Your Honor. Two things. One, they could put it in the bodily injury liability, the one coverage. They could collect the entire dollar there. And whether I just get that coverage, the one that's required by law, or a bunch of other coverages, they're still collecting their dollar. But more importantly, this goes to a basic rate regulation issue, which is we spread costs out. That's what insurance is all about. So we don't go back and say, did we get this $1 from this particular insured on this particular coverage? What we do is we set rates so that insurers collect their costs, their expenses of doing business. I may call my agent 50 times, and that's going to cost them a lot more than you, perhaps, who only calls your agent one time. That's not billed. That's all in the rate. What we do with rates is we set it so they collect their expenses, and that's exactly. Let me give you another example of an expense. There's the cost of putting the policy on the books. That's a flat charge, and it's cost them money to do that. It doesn't matter whether I've got one coverage or five coverages. That's a flat charge for them. Yet another example, there's an Office of Public Insurance Counsel assessment. Again, a tax or fee that they have to pay. And if I recall correctly, I haven't gone back to check, but I believe it's a flat charge. Where do they put that in? How do they recoup that? Just like they do every other flat charge in their business.
And why wouldn't the commissioner be able to say, okay, well, maybe all that's so, but we think this is a more efficient way of handling it?
First of all, I want to point out the commissioner did not say that. The commissioner, there is absolutely no evidence that the commissioner said what Farmers is alleging the commissioner said, oh, it's better to put it over here. But what the problem is that, number one, the commissioner is bound by the statute that says the rates have to be just, reasonable, and adequate. And just, reasonable, adequate rates, as this court ruled in the HLMP case, PUC versus HLMP, means all taxes must be included. So number one, the commissioner is bound by the statute to include all expenses of operation, including all taxes, and this is one of them. Number two, the commissioner has authority to say what goes into the rate, but beyond that, he or she has absolutely no authority over 2135B charges. If these are non-rate charges, as Farmers alleges, then where is the authority? It can't come from 5101, because he or she has no authority there. And that's the fundamental problem.
And I understand your argument. Tell me what you do with this just unfair argument, that they did what the commissioner told them to do. 10 years, they did what they thought the commissioner told them to do. I know you're going to say that's not what he told them.
That is not what he said.
But they're going to say we did what we thought we were supposed to do, and now 10 years later, we are subject to this huge amount of money. And that's just not right.
Okay. Well, First of all, Your Honor, it strikes me as irony that an insurance company is arguing this is just a technicality, and yes, it's the rule of law, but we shouldn't have to follow it, because that's what the argument is. This is no different than every filed rape doctrine case that this court or any court in the United States has ever held. And those cases, just to remind you, are such...
Well, but typically they bubble up at the beginning, and they don't bubble up 10 years later.
Well, many times they do.
Do they?
They do bubble up. And there are many cases you'll see where a utility, for instance, purposely gave a lower rate to a company. And then later on, the FDIC comes in because they took over whoever the utility, or not the FDIC, but there'll be some loans or that sort of, some sort of trustee or whatever will come in later on and say, you're going to have to pay us more money because we took over the rights. They say, look, that was 5, 6 years, 10 years ago. And the problem is that we don't care that you were told the wrong rate. The rule of law is you follow the law and follow the rate that's on file. And there's no difference here. And again, of course, we've cited the cases to the court. The fact that they may or may not have been double dipping, of course, is, we don't know at this point. But it doesn't matter how long a rule has been in effect. If it's a void rule, the rule of law says you cannot charge this fee.
Mr. Powers, I'm having some difficulty following the argument that's in your brief, and you just stated that all costs and expenses of operation, including all taxes and fees, must be included in the rate. You tie that to the provision in Article 5.101, Section 3B2, that the rates must be adequate. Then you cite 3C4, 3Q, and 3AB2 for that proposition. I don't see anything in those subsequent cites that says that is mandatory as to all expenses and taxes. C says, 3C, the commissioner may give due consideration to. There's no mandatory language in that. C4 says one of the things the commissioner can give due consideration to is expenses of operation of all insurers, excluding only those expenses in O. But in Section O, it says disallowed expenses include, again, not comprehensive and not mandatory. I'm not sure I follow your argument or agree that adequate rate means, as you cite in your brief at page 1, all costs and expenses of operation must be included in that, including all taxes and fees. I don't see any mandatory language in the provisions you cite for that proposition.
Okay. Well, it is a fundamental rule of regulatory law that, as I said, that this court laid down back in 1988, that for just, reasonable, and adequate rates, as a matter of the law, that requires the recoupment of all reasonable expenses, including all taxes. That's what this court said in that case, number one.
What case?
It's the PUC versus HLMP case that we've cited in our brief.
Involving a different administrative scheme.
Electric
rate making.
It's electric
insurance.
Rate making, but as the court in American Alliance said, those same principles apply to insurance.
And so you think those principles would apply even in derogation of language to the contrary in a statute, a different statute? Say that a rate must include all expenses and fees, right. You cite the statute for that. And I agree that's the source of that proposition, if it's true. The provisions I'm looking at don't say that all taxes and expenses must be included in the rate. Of course, if that's correct, that all expenses and taxes must be included in the rate, then that could be a compelling argument that the ATPA fee must also be subject to a rate filing. But I don't see language in the statute that says all taxes and expenses must be included in a rate because that's required for it to be adequate.
Right. Well, of course.
In the PUC statute's a different statute. We're interpreting insurance statute here.
Sure. Well, let's look at the American Alliance case then, because they addressed this exact issue. They said, and they said so, I don't remember the exact page, but in that opinion, they say this particular principle of rate making applies just like it does in utilities to insurance companies, that they need to be able to collect As a matter of constitutional law, in just, reasonable, and adequate rates, all their expenses, including all their taxes. That's what the Department of Insurance has said, too, in the rate filing exhibit. They said report all taxes, licenses, and fees. There's no exception in that rate filing form for the ATP fee or any other fee. So that's what the Department of Insurance has said when they filed their rates. That's what this court has said. That's what the American Alliance Court says. It is a, again, I've been practicing rate regulatory law for 18 years. That is the, one of the most fundamental rules of rate regulatory law, that a utility insurer or whatever the regulated company is, for just, reasonable, and adequate rates, they get to collect all the reasonable expenses, including every tax and fee that they pay.
I'm not sure I disagree with that last statement. I guess the question we have here is whether the collection of all taxes and expenses must and fees must be through the rate and the rate process. What are you ring the bell that we could be opening the door to an unregulated premium setting environment if we follow petitioner's argument?
Sure.
What are some of the expenses other than the automobile theft fee that are that at least petitioner claims are unregulated?
Okay. All seven in 2135B other than premium. So let me give you a perfect example, the policy fee. Interestingly, in their opening argument, they said 2135B, and I believe the language was some insurers can charge these other fees. There's absolutely no language in 2135B that says which insurers. It says insurers. It doesn't say rate-regulated insurers. It doesn't say non-rate-regulated insurers. It says insurers may charge these eight charges. They say that the premium charge is regulated by Article 5.101, and that's all that 5.101 regulates is just the premium charge. And that's the only authority under 5.101 that the commissioner has. So the other seven charges, then, are not regulated charges. What could they do when the commissioner comes in and says, you know, your rates are too high, reduce it by, say, $10 as an example? They come back, and an unregulated policy fee, they just bump up the policy fee by $10, and that renders the entire rate regulatory scheme in 5101 superfluous and meaningless.
Well, assume that what you've said is true. That's not a risk in this case, is there? The legislature said the automobile theft fee is a dollar. They can't charge $2. Don't you agree?
I would not agree with that.
It's $1 per vehicle.
Now, that's how much the insurance company has to pay to the comptroller. The legislature did not say how much they're limited. There's nowhere that they're limited to $1 if it's an unregulated charge under 2135B.
So you think the insurers, by their argument, would open the door to charging $10 for an automobile theft fee, potentially, but only paying the commissioner a dollar?
Oh, they pay the comptroller, actually.
The comptroller,
but, yeah, they could call it a tax, and you know they call all sorts of things policy fees.
Now, what if they called it automobile theft fee? Could they charge $10 and then only pay the commissioner a dollar?
There would be
under
no
the statute.
There would be no prohibition under Article 2135B or 5101 or any other statute I know for them to be able to do that.
And the only way to rein that in is to include it all in the rate filing.
Well, I wouldn't say the only way to rein that in, but what the legislature did is said all charges are in the 5101 rate.
I'm looking at Appendix H to Mid-Century's brief on the merits, and it has the tax bulletin. Is that what we're talking about?
No, we're not talking about the tax bulletin.
What directive are they saying makes them put it under 2135B?
I'm not sure I follow that question. I'm sorry. The directive they're claiming is the rule. Well, I'm not sure what they're claiming, to be honest. I guess I'm not following what the argument is.
Well, what is it they're claiming makes them do a $1 recoupment or allows them to do it under 2135B? I was reading H, the tax bulletin, about recoupment from policyholders as the commissioner's statement that that's what they should do.
Okay, that absolutely does not say that. And what the bulletin...
No, I understand, but am I looking at the relevant document for their argument? That this is what dictates that they do that.
I think they would probably say the rule 5.15.
sorry. Isn't it Rule 15?
Yeah, there's a Rule 15 is what they'll argue that it's that they, number one, that they can collect it, and number one, that it's separate from premium is what they're going to argue.
Oh, so this tax bulletin just relates to
whether it's premium or not.
Okay.
Yeah, right. And that's the really the fundamental issue okay. here is that there's no dispute that the ATP fee is not premium. It comes under one of these other charges in 2135B. And that's all that the bulletin says, is that it's not premium. That's not a contested matter. The question is it supposed to be in the 5101 rate? Is that the sum of all charges? Or is it just one of many other charges? So that all these other things in 2135B could be charged.
And so how do they assess the premium tax argument? If it rolled into the rates, how are you going to figure out premium taxes if part of it is in fact not premium?
Well, first of all, that as I understood their argument, there's sort of this double tax issue that, first of all, to determine the premium is easy. Whatever it is that is charged under the 5101 rate, that is what the premium tax statutes apply to. That's a separate tax matter, like just like this bulletin is a separate tax matter. The problem with their argument of this double collecting taxes is that they collect all sorts of taxes in the rate. They mentioned premium rate, but they didn't mention they recoup their income taxes, their sales taxes, real estate. All these taxes are included in the 5101 rate. And so you have the same taxes on taxes argument for all of these things that are included. And, of course, that completely contradicts their claim that the 5101 rate is only the premium rate, asking this court to violate the Meritor Automotive opinion that says when the legislature has used a term like premium in several other statutes but excluded it in one like 5101, a court should not imply that term in the statute where the legislature left it out. Looks like I'm out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kevin.
First, with regard to the questions about double dipping, counsel may not know because he was not involved in the trial court to the extent his co-counsel was, but they stipulated, which is at page 200 of the record, that the auto theft prevention fee was not charged to Automage by MCT or TFIC as part of the premium for private passenger automobile insurance.
As part of the premium?
Yes.
But they would say we don't know if it's charged as part of the rate.
Your Honor, this is it's shibboleth, if you will, that they have argued in the courts below and the courts below agreed with. He made the reference to Meritor saying, well, 5.101 doesn't mention the word premium, so the legislature didn't intend for the commissioner to regulate premiums. He meant for the commissioner, the legislature meant for the commissioner to regulate rates. And the rate is something different from premium. And the Greasing Court, which the court below followed, concluded, well, we agree, the commissioner doesn't regulate premiums. The commissioner doesn't regulate premiums, he regulates rates. And when they talk about premium in 2135B, they mean premium as a component charge of the rate. And then Appellee states in his brief that the rate is the premium plus taxes plus fees. That's nonsense.
Well, look with me on 5101E. An insurer may use any rate by classification within the flexibility band without prior approval by the commissioner. The rate may not include expenses disallowed under subsection O.
That's correct. And that statute says that several times. And then there's a list of expenses that are disallowed.
And so doesn't that mean then they've said what's disallowed, so everything else has to be included in 5101?
No, not everything else is included. That is a non-exclusive list.
Why didn't they put... may not include expenses referenced in 2135B?
Well, because 2135B, Judge, has nothing to do with rate regulation. 2135B was enacted March 26, 1991, about a month and a half before Article 5.101 was. The only relationship between 2135B and rate regulation is 2135B's reference to premiums. Premiums are the result of making the rates under 5.101, regardless of whether the legislature stuck the word premium in 5.101 or not. If you go back to the source of authority for the commissioner, 5.01, he is given the exclusive jurisdiction, and this court has quoted that on several occasions, Mid-Century Insurance versus Kidd, and then Westchester Insurance versus somebody else, that the commissioner has the exclusive authority to promulgate rates of premium. Rates of premium. When you promulgate rates, the end result of adding all the rates up that you charge the insured is premium. And when you get an invoice from an insurance company, it's an invoice for premium. The definition, the insurance definition, insurance dictionary definition of premium is the rate that an insurer is charged reflecting his or her expectation of risk or loss. Premium is a consideration for the insurance. So the result of the rate regulatory process in 5.101 is premium, regulated rates and premiums, and the list of expenses that are disallowed doesn't mean everything else that you can think of goes into the rate. As counsel conceded, it's the province, as we brief, it's the province of actuaries. And the actuaries decide, both those employed by the department and those employed by the insurers, what property goes into making up rates.
But is it true that, as your opponent says, there are all sorts of fees and taxes that are included in the 5101 rate?
There are operating expenses that go in the expense load. Those include the rate-regulated insurers, admittedly, policy fees. And so a rate-regulated insurer doesn't have authority under 2135B to charge a policy fee because that is an operating expense that goes in the expense load.
Let me ask the flip side of that question. Are there any charges outside of the 5101 rate other than the ATP fee in this case?
Involved in this case, no. The only fee involved in this case is
no. I understand that, but does Mid-Century charge any other fees outside the 5101 rate other than the ATP fee?
No. Now, that's not to say an insured won't incur a fee outside of the 5.101 rate that is collectible under 2135B. A good example are finance charges. And bear in mind, when you read 2135B, it applies to both the issuance and the application for a policy. You don't charge premium for an application, but there might be a service charge involved in that application in the form of an inspection fee.
Counsel, I notice your time has expired. Are there any further questions? In that event, the cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.
Thank you.
All right.